Penguin Random House Audio presents When Women Ran Fifth Avenue, Glamour and Power at the Dawn of American Fashion by Julie Satow. Read for you by Karen Murray. To my parents. Buying and selling, serving and being served, women. On every floor and every aisle, at every counter, women. Down in the basement, buying and selling bargains in markdown summer frocks, women. Up under the roof, posting ledgers, auditing accounts, attending to all the complex bookkeeping of a great metropolitan department store, women. Behind most of the counters, on all the floors between, women. Simply a moving, seeking, hurrying mass of femininity in the midst of which the occasional man shopper, man clerk, and man supervisor looks lost and out of place. Retta Child Dorr, 1910. Prologue. As ice gathered several inches thick on the Hudson River and the mercury plummeted below freezing, Hortense Odlum stepped from her chauffeured car onto the Fifth Avenue sidewalk. Gripping her felt hat to her auburn updo, she stared at the Art Deco skyscraper looming above her, at the two-story entryway made of filigreed bronze and glass, and the words Bonwit Teller etched prominently into the limestone facade. A morning rush of passersby leaned against the gale, men lugging briefcases as they trudged toward glass-walled boardrooms and women in nubby woolen coats, ready for a day serving coffee and taking stenography. It was the height of the Great Depression, but even the ranks of the jobless seemed purposeful, huddling against the tall buildings to shield themselves from the biting cold, their bare hands outstretched in the hopes of a Christmas coin. Hortense pulled her fur coat around her and stepped gingerly through the revolving doors. At once, the scramble and blizzard outside fell away, as an atmosphere of hushed grandeur and a blast of warm air enveloped her. She looked about the store's main floor, with its maze of glass counters and mirrored columns, the clacking of high heels against marble echoing through the vast space as a handful of early morning shoppers wandered the aisles. Eyeing the bank of elevators sitting along the far wall, Hortense walked toward them, clasping her purse nervously as she asked the operator for the 11th floor. She exited into a reception area, behind which were a series of doors where Bonwit Teller's management had its offices. The secretary showed her to a nearby couch. Moments later, an elderly gentleman, dressed nattily in a three-piece suit with a shock of silver hair, stuck his head from behind one of the large wooden doors and waved her inside. Paul Bonwit, the 70-year-old merchant, gestured for Hortense to sit across from his imposing presidential desk, and she took her seat with a small, polite smile. Mr. Bonwit, who had come from Germany in his youth and founded his store 4 decades earlier, had spent countless hours charming wealthy housewives with his old-world manners and continental accent. But as he launched into his standard line of questioning, asking after Hortense's trip into Manhattan and how her children were faring, his typical ease faltered and the air between them became stiff and awkward. Bonwit Teller had been one of New York's most exclusive, well-appointed department stores. But 3 years into the Great Depression, its rows of mink coats and shelves of Baccarat glass sat unsold, and, teetering on the cusp of bankruptcy, Mr. Bonwit had been forced to sell. The new owner, Floyd Odlum, was a Wall Street tycoon and one of America's richest men. So far, Mr. Bonwit had managed to keep Floyd at bay, holding on to his large carpeted office and his position as store president. But now, Floyd's wife had made a sudden appearance, and Mr. Bonwit was confounded by the arrival of this 41-year-old mother of two. While she had shopped plenty, Hortense had never worked and certainly not in a store. There's a small office down the hall, Mrs. Odlum, where I hope you'll be comfortable, Mr. Bonwit finally ventured. And by the way, my secretary will be glad to take your dictation when you need her. Hortense's face reddened. She didn't want to be there any more than Mr. Bonwit wanted her to be. But her husband had asked her to make the rounds of the store and report back on her impressions. And while she had little idea how to proceed, Hortense was willing to try nearly anything to please Floyd. "What would I do in an office?" she replied nervously. "I wouldn't know how to act in an office, and I wouldn't have the faintest idea of what to say to a secretary." As their meeting concluded, Mr. Bonwit may have felt relief at Hortense's ignorance of the corporate world. But as he took his guest by the elbow and gently guided her toward the door, he had little way of knowing that Hortense's inexperience belied an instinctive business acumen, that by the following year, their roles would reverse, with Hortense occupying the corner office at Bonwit Teller, sitting at the stately desk as her secretary took dictation, supervising more than 1,000 employees, and directing a store that boasted record-breaking sales. Hortense was setting herself on a path that would thrust her into a career that she had never intended, that would challenge her notions of womanhood and force her to confront difficult truths. It was the start of a journey that would lay the groundwork for an evolution of the grand department store and a metamorphosis of American fashion. In the early 20th century, department stores were a land of glamour and possibility. In a single afternoon, you could have the details of a wedding or funeral planned, find out the dates for the civil service examinations, send a telegram at a Western Union outpost, drop your baby at the nursery to have a leisurely lunch at the tea room, followed by an appointment at the hair salon, arrange for the express delivery of an ermine fur wrap to your home, buy refrigerated steaks, or order a pair of rare green parakeets from the Seychelles Islands. There were stores with miniature zoos and fish ponds and mechanical boats, those with emergency hospitals and trained nurses, and even one store in Oklahoma City that sponsored a baby week, offering 9 infants for adoption, with 6 lucky tykes finding permanent homes. There were window displays featuring works by Georgia O'Keeffe and Salvador Dali, as well as those with elaborate Christmas trains and towers of delicate Easter eggs. While department stores were palatial wonderlands where a nearly boundless array of objects and services could be purchased or arranged, for women, they offered something even greater. From their very inception, department stores were uniquely female universes, where women commanded power in ways that were often unattainable elsewhere. Here, female customers held sway over male clerks and managers, whose jobs it was to serve them. Here, at a time when it was considered impolite and even dangerous for women to walk alone in public, department stores provided cover, enabling them to stroll and congregate on their own, to peruse store windows or purchase needed items. It was here, at the department store, that women could earn a living, and even more, receive the education and training to transform their jobs into lasting careers. Le Bon Marché in Paris, opened in 1838, is often credited as the world's first department store. Its enormous plate glass windows, featuring mannequins dressed in the latest fashions, were astonishing, as was the fact that any person could freely enter, with no obligation to buy, just for the joy of running their hands along a display of silk shawls, or to try parasols in rainbow colors, or smell the aromas wafting from the perfume counters. In America, the Marble Palace stunned onlookers when it opened in 1846, a majestic 4-story galleria on Chambers Street in Manhattan, boasting novelties such as a ladies' parlor, where women could preen in front of Parisian-imported full-length mirrors. In 1862, the founder of the Marble Palace, Alexander Turney Stewart, an Irish.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?